The 100 Years' War, the Duguesclin Period, the English Expedition to Portugal, Part 2. Now, if the Castilian strategy that we talked about last time failed in 1381, it was partly because there was insufficient time to prepare, and partly because the Portuguese king learned something from the disaster of 1373. The southern arm of the Castilian pincer movement was stopped by a series of vigorous Portuguese counterattacks along the valley of the Guadiana. The northern arm was delayed for 2 months when the Portuguese successfully fomented a rebellion in Leon and Asturias behind John's back. Castillo was, however, able to strike one effective blow against Portugal before the Earl of Cambridge arrived. On June 12, 1381, the Portuguese war fleet, comprising 22 galleys and 4 sailing ships, sailed south from the Tagus under the command of the Queen's brother, João Afonso Telo. Their objective was to stop the Castilian fleet blocking Seville by blockading the mouth of the river Guadalquivir. The fleet rounded Cape St. Vincent at the southwest tip of Portugal and penetrated into the Gulf of Cadiz on June 17, 1382. Their arrival caught the Castilians at a disadvantage. The vast armada planned by John of Testamora was still being fitted out. There were only 17 serviceable galleys at Seville with full complements of soldiers and seamen. These had been brought down to the open sea and anchored off the island of Soltes at the mouth of the Rio Tinto. The tips of their masts could be seen by the Portuguese as they approached along the coast of the Algarve from the west. Outnumbered by the enemy, the Castilian admiral, Sanchez de Tovar, resorted to guile. He feigned a withdrawal in hope of drawing the Portuguese on. The Portuguese commander, seeing his prey escaping, fell into the trap. He ordered his ships forward without pausing to draw them up in formation. There was not even time for the crews to drink some water or the troops to finish arming themselves. The result was a disaster for the Portuguese. A large part of their rowing crews were made up of conscripted peasants and beggars pressed into service from the streets of the towns. This hindered the complex business of maneuvering large oared ships. Half of the Portuguese galley, passing too close to the shore, got their oars caught in the nets of some fishermen and had to stop to extricate themselves. The rest closed on Sanchez de Tovar's tightly arrayed fleet in complete disorder and were boarded and captured one by one. By the time the other galleys freed themselves from the nets, they were heavily outnumbered and suffered the same fate. The entire Portuguese navy had been lost in an afternoon. 20 galleys captured and one destroyed. 6,000 Portuguese soldiers and seamen were killed or taken. Portuguese commander was among the prisoners. The damage to the morale of the king, who had devoted so much treasure and time building up his fleet over the past few years, weighed on him for the remainder of the war. John of Testamora, of course, was exultant. He believed the victory would prevent the English from landing in Portugal. So it might have done if it had been followed up straight away. The Castilian blockade of the entrance to the Tagus or the Douro at this stage would have been difficult for the English to force. But Sanchez de Tovar was determined to return to Seville, land his prisoners and spoils, and secure the captured galleys. Portuguese Prince Don João, was fighting with the Castilian armies, could see an opportunity that was being missed. He rushed to Seville, armed with royal letters of authority, gathered together 6 of the captured Portuguese galley, and persuaded some of the Portuguese prisoners to join him in an attack on Lisbon. The small squadron entered the Tagus in the middle of July and made for Lisbon. Don João believed that the men of the capital would rise in support when he appeared, but they probably never even discovered he was in command. As soon as his ships were recognized as enemies, they were driven off in a hail of artillery fire and crossbow bolts and forced to withdraw back to Seville. Unknown to the Castilians, the Earl of Cambridge's fleet was already approaching Lisbon. The ships arrived safely in the roads and anchored beneath the city walls on July 19, 1381. Things began to go wrong as soon as the English army landed. Several weeks were taken up with processions and feasting with the diplomatic business. Don Fernando had declared his allegiance to the Avignon Pope early in 1380, at the same time when he was trying to improve relations with France. The English council, however, were determined to present the invasion of Castile as an urbanist crusade. They may well have thought this would aid their support in Castile. The Portuguese king, therefore, had to be detached from his allegiance to Avignon. On August 29th, he duly duly abjured Clement VII and declared once more for Pope Urban. Fernando's declaration cleared the way for formal betrothal of Earl's 8-year-old son Edward to Princess Beatrice, which was the seal of the Anglo-Portuguese alliance. Edward was acknowledged as the heir presumptive to the crown of Portugal and received the homage of the leading noblemen and walled towns of the realm. The two small children were then ceremonially installed in a vast bed in a chamber in the royal palace, covered by a magnificent black heraldic tapestry with figures worked in pearls. A crowd of courtiers stood around as prayers were said over them by the Bishop of Lisbon, an ardent partisan of Avignon, and by Juan Gutierrez, who was then plotting to supplant him. On September the 8th, 1381, at a great gathering of Fernando's counselors, the captains of the English army, a letter from Urban VI was read out, in which the Roman Pope authorized his adherents everywhere to seize the property of the Clementists for themselves and make war on them everywhere with the same privileges and indulgences as crusaders to the Holy Land. This was simply rhetoric. The Earl of Cambridge's army was in no position to take the field. They didn't have any horses. They had come expecting that horses would be ready for them in accordance with the treaty, but Fernando had done nothing about this. So now they've got to dig up horses and then get their act together before they can even deal with the Castilians. Now the sources for this, the Hundred Years' War, the Chronicles by Froissart, the Hundred Years' War by Perrois, the Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and the Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3, by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, SummaHistorica.com or HistoryAccordingToBob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.